Hi there and welcome to another one of my podcasts. I've only played a couple of tracks over the course of these podcasts of a gentleman called Emilio de Gogorza. He was born in 1872 and died in 1949. And he was a really fine baritone. If you see a picture of him though, he looks like a banker or maybe an accountant. He doesn't look like one's idea of what an opera singer should be, and indeed he wasn't really an opera singer because he was very short-sighted and therefore he didn't really want to be on the operatic stage and confined himself to concerts and recitals, and particularly the recording studio very, very early on. Having been born in Brooklyn but brought up in Spain, he returned to the USA and got involved somewhere around the turn of the century with Victor Recording Company. And not only did he record for them, but he became what these days would have been called an A&R man, finding other talents to record for them who he thought were of quality. There's a rumor that he even persuaded Caruso to record for Victor, though Caruso, having recorded for HMV in Europe already, probably didn't need much persuading. He even made one recording with Caruso about 15 years later. He was a good servant of Victor because he was also willing, because being a Red Label artist, the top level of performer, to use such names as Carlos Francisco and Herbert Goddard for various types of music when he recorded tracks which were issued on the cheaper Black Label. And obviously Victor needed good recordings on the cheap label, and he was willing to, as it were, hide his identity in order to do so. As well as all of this, he managed to work as professor of voice for the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia, and also to find time to marry Emma Ames, the great American soprano with whom he toured. However, 25 years on, they were divorced. Seems strange that you stay together for 25 years and then get divorced, but that's the way it was. The main thing is, though, that he made lots and lots and lots and lots of recordings. Here is one that I'd like to play you. It's de Gogorza's version of the famous Toreador song. And the reason I'm playing you this track is I've got a copy of the record on vinyl. In other words, they found the original metal parts for the 78 and pressed, probably in the 50s or 60s, a copy on vinyl. I'm not quite sure what for, maybe for the issuing of a CD or an LP, but there are lots of these vinyl special pressings, and of course they're wonderful because you get a silent background, so we can really hear his voice. This is probably recorded before World War I, and it shows Emilio de Gogorza at the height of his powers. He was actually a fine baritone, and really, had he chosen to sing in opera, could have been a rival for such famous singers as Scotti. So let's listen to Emilio de Gogorza singing the Toreador song from Carmen.
Amor, amor, amor. felicitate a cosa venne mai. Tace, o giovevo, tace, o giovevo, che si ora pare viene fuor pallantorin, già si lancia le purente, un cavalcade trattinando un picador. A bravo tono, urla la gente, e si ora pare viene bien, bien temorosa. Caparon, il mal d'arruore, e pure al mor, si salve il capien, tu conto di presi con da sera, o te lor, o il amor, cambian, e guardia, cambian, cambian,
here's somebody else whose tracks I haven't been playing for some time, which is a shame. He was one of the greats in his own field. He was born Egbert Austin Williams in 1874 in the Bahamas and died in the USA in 1922. In between, Bert Williams, which is how he became known, became one of the finest comedians on the vaudeville circuit. He was also black, and in a time when there were all sorts of blackface comedians doing stereotypical representations of black men, he was quite different, always sophisticated, always subtle. His records tell you a lot about the humour and the subtlety that he brought to the vaudeville stage. W.C. Fields, who worked with him, once described him as the funniest man I ever saw and the saddest. Well, this is probably one of his biggest hit songs because he performed mainly in songs. Not that he really sang, he sort of recited them. This is a typical example of Bert Williams, and it's a very famous track of his called Nobody. Well, without more ado, the best thing with Bert Williams is to listen to him, and this is what he sounded like.
And I am full of nothing and pain. Who soothes my thumping, thumping brain?
Nobody.
When winter comes with snow and sleet, and me with hunger and cold feet, who says here's 25 cents? Go ahead and get something to eat.
Nothing to nobody.
nothing from nobody, no time. Until I get something from somebody sometime. I never do nothing for nobody, no time.
That song actually became Burt Williams' theme tune. He'd written it, the music part he wrote himself, with somebody called Rogers who wrote the words for him. He'd written that song in 1905, but that recording was from 1913. Now, of course, Burt Williams became a legend in his own time. A gentleman I'm now going to talk about was also black and was also very keen on looking very, very dapper, not to say sophisticated and smooth, and all those words. And I'm speaking about Duke Ellington. Whether he heard Burt Williams live, considering that he was only 23 years old when Burt Williams died, I don't know. But Burt had enough legendary status that 20 years later, when Duke Ellington was entering on perhaps his greatest period of writing, he thought of Burt Williams and one of his wonderful instrumental recordings of the period 1940 to 1942-3, was called A Portrait of Burt Williams. It seems to feature, I believe, Cootie Williams among other people. Duke Ellington had several purple patches in his career, the first one being, of course, recordings from the Cotton Club era, what should we say, 1927 to 1934, that sort of period. And then, as I say, maybe the greatest period of his writing of all, the early 40s. Not that the rest of the 40s were that bad either. However, this is one of maybe the less played of Ellington's masterpieces from that early period. It was recorded in 1940, and it's, of course, wonderful. So, following Burt Williams himself, this is Duke Ellington's Portrait of Burt Williams.
Thank you.
now, I mentioned before the name of Antonio Scotti when I said that Emilio de Gorgorza could have been his rival. Many of you won't know who Antonio Scotti was. He was born in 1866, died in 1936, and was the principal baritone at the Metropolitan Opera House for over 30 years. He was born in Naples, just as was his good friend Caruso, and he was already getting famous by the 1890s. Indeed, by 1898, he was already singing at La Scala, Milano, and sang all sorts of things, including Hans Sachs' Meistersinger. His first performance in America was in Chicago in 1899, and of course he was known in London as well, first singing there in 1899 too. They're singing Don Giovanni. Now, in 1903, by which time he was ensconced at the Metropolitan Opera, a very famous series of cylinders was recorded by a gentleman called Mapleson, who worked there and had been given a cylinder machine. And there really weren't yet any regular opera recordings being done in the USA. So with the permission of the artists, Mapleson hung his cylinder machine over the stage and recorded performances live. Many of these still exist. Some of them, unfortunately, have corroded. But again, quite a few of them were issued in the 30s on 78s. And one of the best preserved were a couple of excerpts from a 1903 recording of what was then a brand new opera called Tosca. Scotti became a very famous early exponent of the part of the evil police chief Scarpia. Now, when talking about the Gorgorza, I also mentioned Emma Ames, the American soprano, the great American soprano, who was actually born in Shanghai but brought up in Maine. She was a year older than Scotti, being born in 1865, and made her debut in Paris, making her debut at the Metropolitan Opera during what was known as the Golden Era in 1891. She also took part, as you will hear, in this performance of Tosca. The third person is a legendary name. His name was Emilio De Marchi. He was a little older than either of them, was born in 1861 and died in 1917. He had a significant career playing at major theatres in Europe and America. But what made him famous is that he was the very first Cavaradossi in Tosca. Unfortunately, nobody bothered to record him on commercial record labels. So here is possibly one of the only recordings we have of him singing in what is sometimes known as the torture scene in Act Two of Tosca. Now, these cylinders were only 2 minutes long, and because the opera was so new, Mapleson didn't really know where the important bits of the opera were, so he didn't necessarily record the arias, which we would like to hear. Nevertheless, here are two little excerpts from Act Two of Tosca, recorded live by Mr. Mapleson at the Metropolitan Opera House in 1903, featuring Antonio Scotti as Scarpia, Emma Ames as Tosca, and Emilio De Marchi, the original Cavaradossi. Quite amazing.
Thank you.
Well, now, I spoke earlier about white people pretending to be black people by blacking up and performing on stage. In America, they tended to make black people out to be stupid clowns. However, in Great Britain at the time, we're talking pre-World War I, there were hardly any black people around. And therefore, to an average Brit, black people were just A, American, and B, exotic, and that's just about all they knew. So the people who depicted black people wearing blackface tended to appear wearing frock coats, top hats, and looking really quite swish. And they tended to sing little sentimental songs rather than have the typical I'm an idiot type jokes. Quite different. Well, Eugene Augustus Ruhlmann, obviously of German descent, was born in 1861 in America and died in 1918 over here in the UK. When he was 10, he was part of an acrobatic act called the Two Wellesleys, and then he appeared as a dancer in 1873, calling himself Master Gene. Then he joined the circus, and then he finally joined a minstrel group where he probably came across blackface for the first time. However, in 1880, when he was only 19, he moved to England and was by this time using the name Stratton. And it was by the name of Eugene Stratton that he became famous in England. He gradually worked his way up the bill in a sort of British minstrel show, and then, a few years later, left the minstrel show to take his act onto the musical circuit, first as a double act and then on his own. Although at one time he used an Irish accent, he now appeared mainly in blackface. He luckily met a gentleman called Leslie Stewart, who was a major songwriter of the time and who wrote a famous musical called Floridora around 1899. And Mr. Stewart wrote him some of his biggest hits. I've given you one in the past called Lily of Laguna. The one I'm going to give you now is his other hit. This was, I think, first sung by Eugene Stratton around 1904, and I think this was recorded about 1911. This is a typical example of the sort of thing that performers on the English musical would perform in blackface. And as you'll hear, it doesn't make fun of black people. It's more, as I say, of a sort of sentimental little love song. So this is Eugene Stratton singing one of his hits, Little Dolly Daydream.
Waited long to have my say, till Southern gals have had their day. I've got the smile now all the while, now just another maid he came to stay. Those gals way down wouldn't get no show, they stand no chance in Idaho. She ain't no pickaninny from way down no West Virginia, but she sets a dream and where the salmon water flow. Why does she set and sigh, this little lady, this little lady, oh? Why does she droop her eyes, this pretty maiden, this lovely gal? Don't you know? Well, now you see, it is because she am so lovesick all through me. She's little dolly daydream, pride of Idaho. So now you know, and when you go, you'll see there's something on her mind. Don't think it's you, 'cause no one got to kiss that gal but me. I ain't spoke yet, nor her to me, but lawyer pretty soon can see she's only waiting for me, Satan, that I'm just as much in love as she. There's one poor cuss, she fooled him so. He tells them all round Idaho that he's her best intended became. Their styles have blended, but she fooled with him to send Magellan on the go. Why does she set and sigh, this little lady, this little lady, oh? Why does she droop her eyes, this pretty maiden, this lovely gal? Don't you know? Well, now you see, it is because she am so lovesick all through me. She's little dolly day, dream pride of Idaho. So now you know, and when you go, you'll see there's something on her mind. Don't think it, you can. No one got to kiss that gal but me.
Well, now, for my final 78 today, we're going to leap forward 20 years and move to the USA. When it comes to pre-war jazz, which in those days, as I've said before, was rather like coffee, you could order it black or white, I have to admit racial prejudice. I prefer the black bands. And I particularly like some of the early semi-forgotten territory bands. The particular band I'm going to play you today, I think, only made about 8 sides altogether, so it's difficult to get hold of recordings of it. It was run by a gentleman called Alphonse Trent, and in their own time, they were very highly regarded, both by the public and by other musicians. Alphonse Trent himself was born in 1905 and died in 1959. He first played with Eugene Cook's Cinco Six, and then took over the band and played with it until 1934, mainly operating in the south and the southwest of the USA, hence the description territory band. They didn't really play all over the USA. All sorts of people came out of his band. Here are a few of them: Alex Hill, Stuff Smith, Snub Mosley, whom I met, Charlie Christian came out of his band, Sweets Edison, Mouse Randolph, and Peanuts Holland. I believe that Stuff Smith, the famous jazz violinist, is part of this band on this recording. It may well be he who is singing, and it's a famous song called After You've Gone. This was recorded in 1930. Noticeably, the rhythm section back then was a tuba and banjo rather than bass and guitar. I love this track. I like all the recordings made by territory bands. And this is a typical example of it, and it really cooks. I really love this sort of jazz. So here then is Alphonse Trent and his orchestra back in 1930 playing After You've Gone. Thank you. brings us to my track, after of course reminding you that I still have lots of 78s for sale, so please do email me at spats47@ntlworld.com. Now, I am about to release a brand new CD, which will be put up probably by the time this goes online on Spotify and Apple and other places. The CD will be called Jazz from a Basement, and I'm going to give you a sort of preview of one of the tracks. It's a wonderful song that was written originally by Jerome Kern, with words by Oscar Hammerstein II, and it was written just before the war, but was made most famous by Peggy Lee, and I suppose my version is a sort of cover version of the way she sang it. I hope you'll enjoy it, and with that, as always, I say, until next time, au revoir.
Someday we'll build a home on a hilltop high, you and I, shiny and new, a cottage that two can fill. And we'll be pleased to be called the folks who live on the hill. Someday we may be adding a wing or two, a thing or two. We will make changes as any family will, but we will always be called the folks who live on the hill. Our veranda will command a view of meadows green, the sort of view that seems to want to be seen. And when the kids grow up and leave us, we'll sit and look at the same old view, just we two, Darby and Joan, who used to be Jack and Jill, the folks who like to be called what they have always been called, the folks who live on the hill.